This is Spectrum.
Alternative medicine, homeopathy, secret society, hypnosis, the paranormal, alternative energy, UFO abduction, the weird, the wild, and the wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan here, my co-host, Tom Theophanis. And remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Hey, Tom, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Scott, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Well, tonight we have a great guest. That's good. Tonight's guest is Victor Vigiani. He has a Bachelor's of Arts degree in Sociology and Psychology and a Master's in Educational Administration and Curricular Development out of Brock University in St. Catharines, Ontario. He serves as a faculty of education advisor at Medellin College in Buffalo, New York. Victor utilizes his extensive speaking and leadership skills to advance the exposure of classified and declassified government UFO documents to engage mainstream media, the public, and in the political imperatives and implications of the full acknowledgement and disclosure by government of the ET UFO presence now engaging the planet. He is now a radio journalist in Toronto, Canada, and he produces audio material, interviews experts on the UFO phenomenon, and is a presenter at conferences and private speaking engagements. He has appeared on television and radio in Australia, United States, and Canada. Welcome, Victor. How are you?
Just fine, and thank you. That's quite an introduction. I just wondered who you were talking about there for a moment.
Hey, okay, Victor, now that we know about your history, maybe you could fill in any details that we don't know. How did what's a brief outline of where you've been in this industry and before that, what got you interested?
Well, initially back in 1975, I believe it was, while I was teaching school within my first couple of years within education, I read a book by Jacques Vallée. I believe the book was called Revelations at the time. And I don't exactly remember why I picked the book up to read it, but I did and found it absolutely fascinating. Jacques Vallée, as you both probably know, is one of the traditional fathers of ufology way, way back, beginning, I guess, a lot of investigation on his own. And after reading that book, I became engrossed with different kinds of material. And from that point on, I read just about anything and everything that I could get my hands on about the phenomenon. From that point of view, I guess I launched a bit of an interest in it, and you know, looking at sighting reports and talking to people who had seen UFOs and trying to get their understanding as to you know what these things were, what they looked like, and how many sightings there were per year. All that kind of information kind of it did fascinate me. However, I eventually moved into another realm of this investigation after probably about 15 or 20 years involvement. I got very heavily involved, not necessarily in just sighting reports and in investigating sightings and talking to people who have seen UFOs. I got into the political aspects of what this phenomenon means geopolitically within the planet and the substructure of government and the cover-up and the kinds of things that we have to do in order to bring this thing forward and involve myself with the media and just an attempt to have people generally recognize that the UFO phenomenon, first, is real, and second of all, that we are, in fact, being engaged by off-world civilizations, and third of all, why the cover-up? What's going on? What are the reasons why the government does not want to talk about this, and why does the government's silence exist to the depth that it does?
Working in this field in Canada, I would assume that you met Tom early on in your research.
That's right. Yeah, I forget exactly, Tom, what point you and I hooked up, but I do remember putting an ad in the Toronto Star, I believe, and Tom picked up on it and gave me a call, and we got together and we did some sightings investigations, and we got together with Errol Bruce Knapp and did a whole lot of things with MUFON at the time, did some presentations over there on St. Clair and Avenue Road. We did that for many years, didn't we, Tom?
Yep. Yeah. I used to go.
For sure.
Yeah, and
quite a while.
Yeah, and we did a lot of work in that direction.
I remember you, Victor.
Yeah, and you know, doing some presentations there brought me, I guess, the to the point of saying to myself, "Listen, there's something more going on here than just lights in the sky." And I began to realize that there's a whole lot more to this than lights in the sky. It's about the lies on the ground that I'm involved with now, and the way the government is in fact lying to the public about its involvement with the UFO issue and the extraterrestrial presence. So that more than anything compels me to work within this area and develop an understanding among the citizens of the you know, that I work with, and also to the media. That's a big job all in itself.
Yeah.
Working.
So there was an evolution in your own understanding of the field.
Working
in Canada, and then, you know, working in the radio field as well, with a bunch of people. Tom, do you have any questions?
Certainly. So Victor, you're also a director of Z-Line Communications. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Z-Line Communications is a news network that I established probably now. I think it's going on we're into our seventh year with Z-Line Communications. And basically, Z-Line Communications is a worldwide news network. If you want to Google it, all you have to do is just type in Z-Line Communications, Z-L-A-N-D, and Communications. If you want to Google that, you'll come up with our website. And basically what it is, it's a conduit through which we look at events within the disclosure movement. Basically, it deals with disclosure and how the media deals with it. And as soon as we get a major event that we feel is significant within the realm of the media, we develop press releases, and we send the press releases out to approximately 1,400 news agencies throughout the world. It's an international organization that disseminates information about the UFO disclosure movement. And we do that on a regular basis. If people want to become part of that, they can become part of the database. And not only would the news agencies receive the information that we're sending about the disclosure movement, but also they would receive the information themselves as far as information is concerned. So, for example, we're following quite a few different things. We're following the premiere of the UFO disclosure program that Richard Serrett and I have put together. It premiered February the 18th, the conspiracy show with Richard Serrett. It's now on television, and he's got probably, around 14 episodes already completely in the can and ready to go. And another issue that we're following is the nuclear missile shutdowns that occurred at Malmstrom Air Force Base back in 1967, along with the other six military officers who had their own experiences right up to the present time. And we all know that that situation is a pretty desperate situation, because it has a whole lot to do with the cascading effects on national security within the United States, and having media recognize that these missile shutdowns are in fact a threat to national security, but they will not talk about it, and they refuse to air the information that that these press officers, these actually military officers, have put forward. So we feel it's a very important component of looking at what the UFO issue is all about with respect to national security.
Okay, well, let's drill down. For those people who are listening who aren't aware of what you're talking about with the missile silos, maybe we can drill down on that a bit, and you can give us a rundown of how what the events were and how they occurred.
Well, there's a series of events. If you have a look at what the documents really tell us, we've got seven specific documents, affidavits. They're signed, notarized affidavits by seven military officers, all of whom, at the time when it happened to them, they didn't know each other. They really had no idea who they were way back in 1967 and through the 60s, 70s, and into the 80s when these events did occur. Basically, the first one that's on record is the one that occurred at Malmstrom Air Force Base, where Captain Robert Salas was the launch commander at the time. And what happened to him was he was in his missile silo on or about the middle of March of 1967, and he received a telephone call from one of his topside security team officers. There's a he's 60 feet down below in a bunker, watching all of the panels where all of the nuclear missiles are you know, showing green and ready to go. All these missiles are always on standby, ready and on alert, ready to be launched at a moment's notice, depending on who gives him the signal to launch them. So they're all in a ready position. And he's 60 feet below, and he receives a telephone call from his topside security people and saying, "My goodness, there's this red glowing object out here. It's hovering over the perimeter of the gate. What the heck are we going to do?" And these men are usually very, very circumspect, very calm individuals. But Robert Salas, in my interviews with him, and I've interviewed him at least four times and spoke with him, personally, he said these men were very, very agitated to the point of almost wanting to run away. As a matter of fact, one of the men, in fact, did attempt to climb the fence, and he was injured in an attempt to get away. So they see this huge red glowing light hovering over the nuclear installation, and you have to remember this is a huge installation that covers miles, you know, maybe 10 or 15 square miles. It's a huge installation, and during the period of time when the object was hovering, not a whole lot was going on. But when the thing did leave, Robert Salas and his commanding officer noticed that 10 of the nuclear missiles went down in sequence and in random, and they were shut off. Basically, they went to what Robert calls as a no-go situation. They tried to restart them. They had no success in doing so, and in effect, a huge number of nuclear missiles within the United States arsenal, of which there are literally hundreds of thousands of missiles, were shut down by an object of unknown origin. We feel, and Robert feels, that it was in fact a UFO. The men that he got the call from said that it was a UFO, and they reported this, and they made sure that the people in their command structure knew about it, and they were told that not to talk about it, to be quiet about it, and that this was something that they did not need to speak to anyone about. So we know that not only did this incident occur, in fact occurred, we have proof that an object of unknown origin was in fact responsible for sending some type of electromagnetic signal or ray or whatever it might have been to cause these missiles to shut down and to go into a no-go situation. So that's basically a very brief thumbnail sketch of what happened that night. And then I guess what happened after that is different individuals. Dwayne Arneson, one of the individuals who was reported to have been involved in repairing these things. He was involved in that, which is Nelson Jameson, another officer who witnessed the shutdown of his missiles. Charles Hault, who you probably all are familiar with in the UK, he was at the Rendlesham Forest incident. He experienced that and actually saw a UFO hover two or three feet off the ground and actually make a landing and hover through the trees and forests in the Rendlesham Forest. So there's a number of these officers, former military officers, who were involved directly with these UFOs that hovered over nuclear installations. In some instances, they just hovered over the installation and made their presence felt. They really didn't shut down missiles in each case, but they were, in fact, drawn to nuclear installations and made their presence felt at that time.
What's the new thing happening with WikiLeaks now and some of the information coming out of him?
Well, there's a whole lot built up about that, Tom. The WikiLeaks thing, as far as we're concerned, might be very similar to the files that were what we call dumped onto the scene by Brazil and France and the UK and Denmark. There have been about four or five nations who have performed what we call a dump of information, basically UFO files that have been put into the public domain by military or the government themselves. And basically these files are, in my opinion, virtually non-entities. They're just a cover-up for what's really going on. And I think particularly in the case of the United Kingdom, they dumped these files into the public domain, hoping to satisfy this huge hunger that the public has about the UFO phenomenon. And in a way, that kind of thing, is, as far as we're concerned in the disclosure movement, it really wasn't very successful. Basically, if you've read any of the files, and I've gone through I know the Canadian government has about 7,500 files that they've put on to their Library and Archives Canada. And if you look through, I've gone over through about 2,500 of these files. And it's very similar to reading the telephone book. There's really nothing of any real gravitas within these things. They're basically citing reports by people. You know, Uncle Fred one night, calls the Royal Canadian Air Force saying that he saw, you know, a red light over his barn, and that's about it. There's no investigation. There's no intense questioning of the individuals. Yeah. There's nothing that goes on about it. So the thing is filed probably with the University of Manitoba, and it just sits there and nothing happens with it. And these 7,000 files, as far as we're concerned, from the Canadian government, are non-entities. They're just basic telephone book information, as I call it. However, I must say that in reviewing some of the files, we do have information that the Canadian government back in the 1950s, along with the United States government, entered into quite a few discussions about what to do about the UFO phenomenon. And I have several of those documents on the Zealand Communications website that talk about the Canadian government developing, along with the United States government, a manner in which to handle information coming to them about UFOs. And basically, the Canadian government took the position that when they did handle UFO reports, the media and internal sources within the Canadian government and military were told to, quote-unquote, play down UFOs in order to not exacerbate interest among the general public. So they did everything they could to receive the reports, but they did nothing with them. And that's very clear in all of the memos that the United States Air Force and the Royal Canadian Air Force at the time were very entrenched in not doing or saying anything public about the UFO sightings in order not to develop more and more interest in it. And the memo states it quite clearly. There's just no doubt about it. It's signed by a military person, and it's dated, and it's marked top secret. And so those kinds of documents in the files of the Canadian government anyways show that not only are UFOs real within the government bureaucracy, that we know for a fact that the Canadian and American governments have entered into dialogue and discourse and discussions about what to do about the UFO phenomenon. And it in a way, it does indicate that they're just as confused as we are about what this phenomenon is. And it also proves, too, Tom, that they scramble jets on a regular basis. Yeah. So I've received 117 pages from the Department of National Defense indicating that that three F-16s were scrambled back in 2001, very recently, to chase three UFOs that emerged over coming out of Alaska. And not only did these three F-16s track this thing, we have tracking reports that indicate a medical evacuation jet also saw exactly the same three UFOs at the same time as the F-16s did. So we know that the Canadian government is engaging in this. We know that they have information about it, but they make absolutely no comment at all publicly about their radar trackings or the information that they're in possession of. And we can go on for another hour about that kind of information. As a matter of fact, I spoke to people in NORAD just recently, as September of this past year, about their operations, and they fully admitted to me that they were aware of these kinds of things, but they didn't know what to do about it. But then again, when you get NORAD speaking about that kind of thing, that kind of stuff does not rise to the surface, and it's not made public knowledge. And even if it does, they deny it.
And how willing are they to say that to you on camera or in a recording that can be publicly displayed?
They would never do it.
not happen.
It wouldn't happen. The closest that I got to them admitting to these things was that they do track unknowns. That's basically the extent to which they will admit that they do interact with these things. They call them unknown targets, or they call them unknowns. And they do admit that they do track unknowns, but that's as far as they go to admit that these things are crafted.
That sounds a little bit like a cover your ass statement.
Of course, there's no doubt about it. It's not in their interest to say anything, because if they did, myself and a lot of other news agencies and people within the research community would be all over them like a dirty shirt, trying to get them to admit or at least repeat what they did say. Now, that kind of information does not rise to the surface, because we know the CIA, then there are memos to this effect too. If you take a look closely at some of the CIA memos that have come out in the 60s, they have a concerted policy, a very well articulated policy about what to do when the media becomes involved in this. The media can talk about them. The media can, say there was a UFO over Wisconsin or something like that. There's no problem with that at all. But they will not at all be allowed to question, raise these questions, let's suppose, at a news conference where the President of the United States is making any kind of announcement. There is no way that anyone in the press gallery or the press audience at a United States presidential press conference would be allowed to ask a question about UFOs. So, and it's amazing that kind of control is more than evident within the bureaucracy and the press contacts and the press corps in Washington, D.C. They can ask any other question they want about national security, but thou shalt not talk about UFOs at press conferences. So as far as NORAD's concerned, or even NATO or any of those organizations, it's quite clear that there is a very tight lid on all of this information. And not only is it a tight lid from anything getting out, the government is silent about this. They say nothing about it. It's not just covering it up. They will not articulate. They will not have any kind of announcement of policy regarding their take on UFOs. Although we know quite well behind the scenes, this stuff is talked about at the highest levels of governance in the world. We know for a fact Pentagon people talk about it. You can't tell me that 10 missiles get shut down and people in the Pentagon don't know about it. The Pentagon knows about this right. information.
So it's also, Obama was asked flat out about UFOs, and he said he dodged it. He sidestepped that like the true politician he is, and said, "Well, I don't know about the people on other planets, but I do know about the people here." And, it was just amazing. Right. Like, what an amazing! He didn't even give a yes no answer. He just completely dodged it with a political maneuver. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's very careful, and most other presidents have done that. We know that in spite of the fact that Bill Clinton was very involved and very interested in trying to find out about the UFO phenomenon, and we know this for a fact, that Bill Clinton went out of his way to attempt to get information about the UFO phenomenon, and he was shut down. We know that Jimmy Carter was instrumental in attempting to try to get information out of the former CIA director, George W. Bush Sr. As a matter of fact, the information that we have on good authority from several sources is that, in fact, Jimmy Carter did go to the CIA, went face-to-face with George W. Bush. I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but he did ask George Bush for the UFO file. And he said, "I want all the information."
He asked Papa Bush, didn't he?
That's right, George W. Bush Sr. Yeah. That's right. And at the time, he confronted Bush at the time, and the response by the CIA director at the time, George W. Bush Sr., was that, "No, Mr. President, you do not have a need to know, and you're not getting any information about UFOs from us." So that kind of information does not seem to float in the media. And if you do bring it forward to them, they just disregard it. And I've brought it forward on many interview shows that I've been on before. And you get a lot of furrowed brows. And they attempt to air it, but the big news programs like 60 Minutes or Dateline, you'll never see this information on Good Morning America.
And if you do hear it, then what you're going to hear is a lot of the giggle factor thrown in and the ridicule. they'll say it in a snide voice and ridicule it.
Yeah, that's the overt policy that this stuff, as long as that kind of mindset, Scott, is perpetuated, it doesn't matter what kind of information you bring forward, it will not mean anything, because you'll always get that sort of raised eyebrow, a little snicker in the background, and people have almost become conditioned to receive that kind of information. It becomes a psychological ploy a lot.
That's exactly what it is. Bang on. They know what they're doing. People trained in the media know exactly how to say things in such a way as to put a light on them and convince you to look at it the way they're saying it.
Precisely. And
they're master manipulators.
Yeah. What I must say, though, what I must admit, if we compare right now, let's go back 8 years, for example, you would not see 8 years ago some of the really intense media coverage that this thing is getting, in a way that is almost, I describe it as a glass ceiling. And there's a glass ceiling up there, and the UFO issue is rising above the surface. Like, let's take, for example, CNN's coverage as far as Larry King is concerned. Larry King has covered the Stephenville lights. He's covered the Washington press conference regarding the nuclear missile shutdowns and several other aspects of the UFO phenomena. James Fox has been on there several times talking to different individuals, yeah, along with Larry King. That kind of coverage would have been almost unheard of 10 years ago. So we've got a news organization like CNN who's bringing this to the forefront. And things like this are gradually seeping out. The Peter Jennings special several years ago would have been unheard of,
right,
you know, 10 years
and
ago.
And this is officially sanctioned. Larry King isn't a rogue reporter. He's the go-to guy when you want stuff put out in official capacity. Trust me, he's allowed to say what he's saying, and he's done so with permission.
Yeah, that's true. He will let it out. It's almost like letting the pressure out of a balloon. You know, you just let the pressure off for a little while, and it sort of deflects any interest that's going on. But you know, you can bet your dollars to donuts that this information, if it arrives on the television screen, and Larry King has done it, you can be sure that it won't be the information the next morning on NBC News or CBS 60 Minutes that next Sunday. They will not cover this information, and you will not, as I said earlier in the program, you will not get people asking questions at a press conference. Mr. President, yesterday on CNN, Larry King reported that there was a UFO that was tracked by radar in Stephenville, Texas, and moved towards the Bush Ranch. Do you have any comment on that? That's what you'll get. Or you'll get a real nice dodge on the part of the president.
Yeah.
And first of all, the question wouldn't be allowed. So that's what I mean by the glass ceiling. There is a very, very thick glass ceiling above this, and the information is only allowed to rise so far before it hits that glass ceiling and doesn't go any further. Now, once again, the caveat is I think the glass ceiling is becoming a little bit more permeated by this information. It's we're moving the ladder up a bit. We're moving the rungs up in the ladder a bit by bit, and disclosure is becoming a little bit more prevalent internationally, and you can see that. So it's something that we're making strides with, but still we're not where we need to be in terms of the global realization that we are being engaged by off-world civilizations. And if you want to talk about fossil fuels, that's probably one of the reasons why they're not letting this information out. The fossil fuel aspect of this is probably, as far as I'm concerned, the key component in the cover-up. Because
it's one of the biggies, yeah.
Yeah, that to me is the key component of it.
How is the exopolitics movement right now dealt with in Europe, for instance?
Actually, Tom, the exopolitics movement is growing like wildfire. We have, the last count I had, there was 34 different international organizations throughout the world, Exopolitics Denmark, Exopolitics South Africa, Exopolitics France, Exopolitics Canada, Denmark, Sweden, is really growing. And there's a fellow in Germany and in Denmark, two fellows actually, who are just taking this to the hill and really making some real good inroads in educating people. That to me is probably the most effective tool that most of these organizations are using today. They're attempting the movement towards disclosure, and as we all know, that's very, very difficult. To disclosure we define as the acknowledgement by government of the UFO phenomenon. In other words, the public admission that something is going on in our skies that we don't know about. What's happening in exopolitics is that we're moving the bar up, as I said earlier, regarding disclosure. We're getting closer and closer all the time. But what these exopolitics organizations are doing is educating their constituents to the phenomenon of UFOs. And they're getting lots of people involved in this. It's becoming a very strong grassroots movement, and more people publicly are knowing about UFOs throughout the whole world. So that's one of the really good benefits of exopolitics. Now, some of the positions that some of the exopolitical people take may be suspect, may be, you know, criticized a little bit in the general public, and I can understand that criticism, because some of the perspectives that the exopoliticians within the exopolitical movement take are a little bit extreme, a little bit speculative, and I will be the first one to admit that.
Are there any examples of that? I mean,
I don't want to get
talking
into
about Greer.
No. Stephen Greer. No, he's not really part of that exopolitical type of thing. When you start talking about personalities, I try to back off on that, Scott, because I don't like criticizing people, because each of us in this field have our own perspectives, and some people tend to go out on limbs a little bit further than others, because we have to admit that this whole field of UFO investigation is marginal at best. Even those of us who feel that we're relatively conservative in mm-hmm. within the field of UFOs, you take a look at our position relative to someone in the general public who knows nothing about it or has no opinion on it. We right. are way out there. We are on the margin. We are the marginal individuals. We are the right. ones that are the wackos, you know, as far as they're concerned. So it's a relative thing.
So within this larger group, you'll have varying degrees of perspectives and personality. I get that. The only reason I said Greer is because I was probably thinking of your earlier comments on disclosure, so I associated that. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, not really. And Stephen, you know, I know Stephen quite well. I mean, Stephen and I communicate regularly about different issues because I feel that he has some very, very valuable perspectives on this, because he's one of the first ones within the disclosure movement who stuck his neck out at the press conference in 2001 and brought forward at the press conference itself about 20 people who were, you know, specifically involved themselves in the cover-up and decided to come forward. And he did a fantastic job. And we cannot criticize him for doing that. But recently, I think Stephen, many people feel, has done things that a lot of people within the UFO community don't understand. He's moved into different areas as far as, you know, free energy is concerned, and that's what he does, and we can't criticize it. He has moved the disclosure movement ahead leaps and bounds, despite the criticisms of many people. And Stephen is the first one to admit that he'll take any kind of abuse as long as he feels that this whole movement is moving forward.
All aliens are positive?
No, I don't for a second think that's the case. We know that the way the alien sort of agenda works is, and through some of the sources that we have, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the work of Stan Fulham in the book
yep.
Challenges of Change. Stan is very specific. And how he gets his information is probably another program altogether. He and several other individuals, they're putting forward information that the galaxy is filled with all kinds of different life, and some of them not so nice and some of them benevolent. And I guess what it all boils down to is that the ones that are benevolent and the ones that are not so benevolent have a bit of a standoff going on. And if, in fact, the entire ET community were these sort of, you know, kinds of individuals that come down and have us for dinner, they'd have done it long ago. And they're not just sitting back waiting for us to sort of capitulate and give up the planet before they come in. They could do it tomorrow if they wanted to. But there are, I think, agencies within the UFO or the extraterrestrial community that balance this kind of perspectives off and decide that, well, let's just leave Earth alone for now, and we'll just sort of manage it in the way we manage it. Because I'm firmly of the opinion that we have no idea what the alien agenda is. We don't have a clue what it's all about. Now, there may be some people in the military that have made contact that might know what's going on, but even they don't know the full agenda of what the entire community of extraterrestrials have up their sleeve. And that's what disclosure is all about, is finding out what the government knows, getting them to acknowledge it and come forward and to admit that this human community that we have, we're no longer adolescents, we're not children, we can handle the information. They think that if the information does come out, the world will be in huge panic. I completely disagree with that. Now, it will be unsettling. There will be a degree of paradigm shifts going on with different kinds of perspectives, but eventually this truth has to come out. It cannot remain hidden for the next 60 years again. So it's high time that we understand that although we don't understand the alien agenda and who they might be, the fact that it's hidden is as far as I'm concerned, a crime. It is a crime against humanity. And we have to get the information out, good or bad.
Go ahead, Tom.
How was the conference in Spain there? How was it accepted?
It was
about
a year ago, a year and a half ago. Yeah, I followed the conference in Barcelona. I didn't follow it daily. It was on a continuing live stream for most of the day, just not every day, but for most days. And I followed it, and I was very, very impressed by several presentations, most of which myself was impressed by the presentation of Robert O'Dean, the former NATO officer, who told some just literally spine-chilling stories about his experiences with NATO and tracking literally flocks of UFOs as they moved over Europe. A lot of great information came out of that, and not just information, Tom. What came out of it was this new awareness, public awareness, of what this information was all about. And it gets to the point where you can only talk about UFOs for so long. You can only talk about sighting reports for so long before it becomes a little repetitive, and it becomes very kind of hackneyed after a while. You can only talk about, well, we saw 15 UFOs, or did we see 5 UFOs? Well, it really doesn't matter how many UFOs you see. In the exopolitical realm and disclosure realm, the meat and potatoes of this issue is what does it mean geopolitically to our governments? And I think Spain really moved the whole bar a little bit further up the ladder in allowing this information to come out in a credible way. We're seeing a real phenomenon happened here. We're seeing very well-educated people, high-level military individuals coming forward that have total credibility and exhorting the media to look at this information. That, as far as I'm concerned, is the key component of the disclosure movement, and not just the sort of mundane sighting reports that perhaps agencies like MUFON, and they've got their own problems right now too, but I don't want to talk about that. That MUFON does. Right, yeah. It's you can count UFOs for till the cows come home, but the fact of the matter is, the meaning of it is much more important than the actual sighting report. So I think Spain went a good distance in making the UFO phenomenon a little bit more palatable, a little bit more understandable, a little bit more relative and relevant to most individuals and people who didn't really have an opinion about UFOs are moving forward to make the conclusion, hey, you know what, something just might be going on, because I heard a former NATO officer say this, that, and the other thing about his experiences. And it doesn't always
Was that Bob Dean at
that's right. Yeah, Robert
during the Barcelona? Yeah. When he got up there and he talked about the human race's destiny is in space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, okay.
Yeah. If anyone does want to listen to his presentation, all they have to do is just Google you know, the Spain, Barcelona, and Robert Odin, and they can go to the YouTube presentation, and it is one of the best presentations I have ever heard in my life.
Yeah. He was getting a lot of congratulations for that one. Yeah. He showed pictures of a base on Mars. He showed pictures of UFOs that were 5 miles long. At the end of his discussion, another gentleman came up. God, if I can remember his name.
I wish I could help you. I'm sorry, Scott.
And, well, another gentleman came up on stage with him and said he had worked on Mars. I should know his name. I can't remember his name. Do you know what I'm talking about? The guy got up on stage and he says, oh, he can confirm everything that Bob Dean's saying, because not only are there pictures of the base on Mars, he's worked there.
Yeah. You talking Basaggio?
No.
No, okay. Then I'm sorry. I can't recollect.
He was that Project Camelot whistleblower.
Oh, I see. Okay, but I guess the point you're making is that some of the information that's coming out is pretty scary. It's pretty scary. It's a very, very way out there. And I guess the bottom line is that
Sorry, Victor.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, how is the European media treating the subject right now, and compared to the American, North American?
I'm not quite sure about. I know France and Germany are probably France, Germany, and Denmark. Those media, especially Germany, they seem to be a lot more open to reporting not just UFO sightings, as I said earlier, but a little bit more information about the disclosure of all this stuff. They seem to be leading the way in Germany, and in listening to some people within the European theater on this, we are of the opinion that if disclosure or at least acknowledgement by government is going to happen, it could very well come out of Germany, because the people that are working in the exopolitical realm there have a very good handle on internal media workings. And we know that the United States could be the big kingpin in the disclosure movement, but they have a whole lot more to lose if they do disclose. So internationally, Germany seems to be at the forefront of the potential, anyways, of disclosure coming out of Germany, because the media there is a little bit more open to it. As a matter of fact, it's a lot more open to it. The UK media is another media that's very, very open. The Guardian within in the United Kingdom, the organization called The Mail, they constantly are talking about it. Constant reports about UFO phenomenon and the geopolitical implications of it. So it's really something that's moving forward. And the Huffington Post in the United States is a good supporter of the UFO phenomenon, but not nearly as entrenched as the UK and the German media. So it once again, it's moving forward a little bit at a time. And it's unfortunate that it's that way, but that's just the way media works. Media works very, very slowly. And within media, especially within the United States.
I remembered the name of the guy, by the way. It was Henry Deacon.
There you go.
That's a pseudonym he uses.
Yeah.
Now, you were in Australia recently doing some work over there. Tell us how.
Yeah, twice actually. Just recently, last year, my wife and I went down to Australia for April, May, and June of 2010. But before that, we spent a full year in Australia in 2003. It was a teaching exchange opportunity that my wife had, and the two of us went down there together. And while we were there, we traveled around. We traveled the entire continent. But during the whole period of time, I got to know quite a few people within the UFO movement within Australia. Spoke at conferences in Sydney, Australia, in Brisbane, and in Adelaide, and just got on the radio a number of times, because the media down there is incredibly open about this. They don't have too many qualms about talking about it. You don't get the same kind of repression or the same kind of giggle factor that you do up here. So they're very open to it. They have a lot of great organizations in Sydney. There's a tremendous group of people down there who I still maintain contact with. Diane Harrison in Brisbane, Australia, who runs a great organization. They're very interested. They have a great following. They have regular meetings, especially in Brisbane and Sydney. An individual, Keith Basterfield, in Adelaide, he has unearthed some really great Australian UFO files. He and his colleagues have worked on bushels full of documents down there, and I helped them ferret through some of them while I was down there. So there's a great feeling about the UFO movement, the disclosure movement. And as a matter of fact, the conference that I spoke at in Brisbane in 2003, who was there? There's a number of people. Dr. Lear was there. Who else? Travis Walton spoke at the conference. The fellow who heads the Nexus magazine at Woods, I forget his first name. A lot of real high profile people at the conference, and they spoke about the different aspects of ufology. But I was the only one at the time who spoke about disclosure, and I spoke for about an hour and a half, and it really kind of hit them hard, and a little bit. Some of them really didn't react as I may have thought they might have. They were very, very skeptical about the idea of disclosure. They were sort of into the realm of just, you know, counting UFOs and looking at what they look like and, you know, that kind
by
of
that
thing.
By that, do you mean that they were skeptical that it was possible for disclosure to happen? Or
disclosure and why. What's the idea behind all of that? What I think a lot of the individuals who did raise that issue – they didn't understand. This really kind of surprised me. They didn't understand the geopolitical implications of what UFOs really meant. That's the kind of transition that I went through back in the late 70s. You get, like, as I said, I'll repeat myself again, but you get to a point where, you know, counting UFOs and what they look, are they cylindrical, are they triangular, are they made of metal, are they made of lights, you know, that you can only go so far with that stuff. And we had 475 sightings in the month of January, and it's going to go up to twice that in May, and that's all nice information. You know, you can ruminate over that information for as long as you want, but there reaches a point where the logical extension of all of that information is the geopolitical implications of what these things are, where they're from, why they're here, and why the heck is the government hiding the information. And I think that's what they found hard to accept, that there was a geopolitical and policy implications to do with the government and military regarding UFOs. They didn't make the connection, as far as I was concerned. And I brought that out very, very heavily, and I got a lot of criticism for it. But then again, once I raised the issue of fossil fuels and the idea of the kinds of energy that these things use, and once I mentioned that in the discussions afterwards to a lot of individuals, they get to, oh my goodness, you could be right. I asked the question, how do these things move? What do they do? Like are they moving interdimensionally? Are they moving at or beyond the speed of light? They're not using fossil. They're not filling their tanks up on their home planet with gasoline and getting here that way.
Yeah. Maybe that's why Earth is so popular. They come here for gas.
You know what? I never thought of that. My goodness, that's a great wow. Maybe they're attracting them.
They travel billions of miles. Just to come to Earth to get some gas, you know, probably some oil, filter.
Maybe that's why sightings have gone down over the past couple of weeks, is because the price of gas has gone up, you know?
Yeah, they said, fuck it, they're going
to the price of gas is up now, that's why.
We're going to another planet. These guys are milking us.
But so anyways, Victor, we've been getting a lot of good reports out of China too now recently, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. The Chinese people are all over this. The organizational, thing over there, the organizational structure really isn't as strong as it could be. But there are several groups over there that who is Neil Gould, who's one of the exopoliticians in exopolitics, China. He's an Aussie by background, but he runs a tremendous organization over there, and the number of UFO sightings over there are on the increase. Now, maybe they're on the increase because more information is being allowed to be let out about it. Maybe the sightings were as high as they've always been in the past, but just it just never got out. So I think that the kinds of UFO sightings in China and some of the although I don't like to rely too heavily on video, because the video thing can be made up as easily as anybody can move a you know.
Yeah, with the software
the software available nowadays.
Looking at UFO videos is almost done.
It's very frustrating, and the number of experts that can actually analyze these things, they're very few and far between. And unless there's a mass sighting over a large town or a large city, yeah, and you get media coverage of it with video or filming of it, the things that float over the internet, so to speak, it's so suspect. And I must admit, there are some really good, credible looking things. I mean, they look credible, but
we're not saying that they're all fake. So I didn't say that at all. I'm just saying that the tools available now for people to make these things and make them extremely well are there. They exist, and there's some incredibly talented people out there that might want to just throw it up and you know, jokers, and just throw it out there and see what people say, get a kick out of it. And then that's lumped in with the people who are going out and filming something with their beautiful HD cameras that everybody has now and their video cameras, and throwing that on the internet with it, with an honest heart saying, look, this, I seen this, I don't know what this is, check it out.
That's right.
Can't tell now.
That's right. It confuses the whole issue. And I think that's one of the things that really kind of makes a mess of this whole issue. It really tarnishes it to a point. And those individuals that are doing it, whether they're doing it on their own or whether there are people, you know, within governmental agencies setting these things up. And I don't want to sound overly conspiratorial, but who knows? These things are on the internet, on YouTube. And right now, you just can't tell the difference. Now, take a look at the one that was just recently done in Jerusalem. I don't know if you've seen the one.
You can see the pixels. And if you look at that closely, you'll notice that none of the lights move.
But
the only light that moves is the one over top of the...
That's right.
Right? And that one moves straight up. But every other light is just locked in place like it's a picture.
Yeah. What I wish we could do is I wish we could get a hold of some of the wing-mounted camera film that pilots used to take back in the 50s and 60s. If we could get some of that information released, or some of the things that astronauts have taken, those to me, we do have a few things that the shuttles have captured. They are worth real examination as far as I'm concerned. But I wish we could get some of the gun camera film that the pilots in the 50s, when they're flying their F-86s around and getting that information, if some of the canisters of that could be released, that would be, in my estimation, a real bonus and a real credible way of looking at the stuff, if people want to look at that kind of information. But as far as I'm concerned, the deepest information that we have, the best information we have as far as we are concerned, is the political information about the memos and the letters and all of the declassified information that we've got so far. And if you look very closely at some of this stuff, anyone, after a week of research, has to scratch their head and say, what the heck has the government been up to over the past 60 years? And a lot of people do criticize some of the stuff that's out there because it could be planted or disinformation, but by far and away, if you look closely at most of the documents that are credible, they indicate
it's amazing.
It really is. And it is.
If
your listeners want to, spend some time, all you have to do is go to some of the great websites. Come to my website. Come to Zealand Communications. I mean, I don't want to plug it that badly, but I'm not that desperate about it. But come
to plug it.
Yeah. Well, it's the documents are all right there. They're there in black and white, and the signatures are there. And I would defy anyone, and I try not to put up things that are doubtful. Anything that's even got a hint of doubt to it. I try to put up the best possible information that we possibly can, and have people look at it and make a decision. And not only just look at the documents themselves, but look at other information. Look as much different information as you can, and then what you do is you begin to connect the dots. You begin to see the similarities in these documents. You see the same names coming up in different sources, and once that happens, you get to understand that not only is there an individual document, but that will lead you to other sources that will corroborate what has gone on as far as information is concerned. Now, for example, the Twining memo. If you take a look at that memo and you read it carefully enough, you'll see that it indicates that the United States government has been talking about this stuff for a long, long time, and they've known about it for a long time.
Just for the listeners who don't know what the Twining memo is, could you just give a quick – and then I have another question.
Sure. The Twining memo was written by a high-ranking military official. And let me, if I can pull this thing up quickly – we can have a look at some of the very specific things in, if I can find it fast.
Go for it.
Yeah, it's widely available. All you have to do is, you know, type in the Earl Twining, TWINING, and memo, and just maybe put along UFO with it, and you'll get the entire memo out there for you. And basically, it's written by Nathan Twining, a high-ranking official, and it is, it's got 8 different sources within it that this fellow sent it to, contributing members, Robert Oppenheimer, James Doolittle, Professor Albert Einstein. These are all people that this memo was sourced with, and it arrived on the scene probably – the mid 50s, just after many of the sighting reports were trying to be dealt with over the United States. Back in 1947, as you know, that was the first incidents of the Roswell crash, and they were attempting to deal with that. So at the time, Nathan Twining sent out this memo, and he dealt with the Socorro, New Mexico incident. And he dealt with the Roswell incident, and his conclusion that these things, technically speaking, upon close examination of all the information, that these things were not fictitious. They were not things that were static electricity. They weren't weather phenomenon. And what he also indicated too was that the United States government did not have any similar type of craft, so he eliminated that too. And to have a general like Twining put out that kind of information at the time was groundbreaking. When I see these documents, what I do is I say, my goodness, let's just suppose a similar ranking officer did that today. Similar ranking officer in the United States Air Force today did something like that. And put it out into the general public, into the public domain. What kind of furor would be amassed by something like that? It just wouldn't be allowed. So from that point of view, the Twining memo was a real groundbreaker in talking about the military's understanding that these things were in fact a real phenomenon, and they just didn't know what it was at the time. And their conclusion that it was in fact extraterrestrial. And he actually uses the word extraterrestrial in the memo himself. So that's a good place to start if anybody wants to read a great document.
Very interesting.
About,
Very interesting. I did have another question. First, a comment. It's very interesting that how it's changed over the last 60 years, and how in 1947 they could make a news report that they had recovered a crashed disc, and the next day they retract that and say, it was just a weather balloon, no worries. And people back then went, all right, okay. I mean, a minority of people got together and said, whoa, wait a minute. What do you make an official report that you received a crashed disc. The next day you say it's a bunch of weather balloons. A couple of years later, they start talking about dummies flying out of planes, and people just go, all right, okay.
Yeah, they buy it, yeah.
I think nowadays you'd have a little bit more trouble. Maybe I'm giving people too much credit, but I think nowadays people would, they wouldn't buy it as much.
Yeah. Now, well, the that's question, a good, Yeah, it's a good point. I guess you have to look at the level of sophistication of the media at the time. Right now, we exist in a media environment that's extremely sophisticated. The communication is instantaneous. I mean, you can get a piece of information let out in London, England, and within a nanosecond, it's on somebody's desk in New York. And this happens, you know, trillions of times a day with all kinds of information.
Right.
Back in the 40s and the 50s, information moved very, very slowly. And the kind of time lag that you had as a media person or as a government official, you could clear your tracks pretty easily. So when the crash happened in Roswell, and then they did put out this, you know, the bulletin that, you know, crash disk in New Mexico, so on and so forth. I guess Blanchard was responsible for that, and Ramey. When they did all of that, they had time to say, okay, you know what? We put out a memo or a report that we've got this disk crashed, and we know that it's not a weather balloon. It's something that now we realize there were bodies, there's you know, parts of a crash, the structure, it had substance to it. What the hell is this? And let's sit down and talk about this. How can we cover it up? Let's just say it was a weather balloon. Okay, I'll retract it. Bang, and no questions asked. And generally, the public accepted that. Now,
they said, thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I mean, the government at the time provided all the answers for people, and people swallowed the answers on a regular basis. It was, you know, the war had just finished. Okay, the war had come to an end a couple of years earlier. And thank goodness, you know, the good guys won, and all of the American public, generally speaking, and throughout the industrial world in Europe, they had a lot of faith in government. Government was trusted because government and the military saved them from the big Nazi machine, and so government was something that people generally, for the most part, trusted. Especially the military, yep. Because they were the ones that were responsible for saving the planet from this dastardly individual who's trying to move across Europe. So there was a different environment, a different mindset among the public. So the military had pretty well free rein in putting information in and taking information out and then, you know, zipping this in and zipping that out. They could pretty well say and do whatever they want. And the media was much less prone to question than it is now. Now they may have been, you know, skeptical at some points along the line, because that was the job of the media, but not nearly as much as they are now. So the way the media portrayed the information to the general public at the time was the way the military wanted it to be portrayed, and whatever the military said, it got done. So it was very simple at the time to do that, and that's why the Roswell incident was very well covered up. But the stories about what happened, now, if in fact, this was just a weather balloon, why did literally hundreds and hundreds of military people show up on the site and walk arm in arm collecting this stuff across the Foster Ranch if it was just a weather balloon?
Yeah, and they needed two trucks to transport that weather balloon.
Of course, yeah. And why was a good example? Why was Frankie Rowe, a young girl of about 12 years old, who sat at her kitchen table, and her father was one of the firemen that was on the scene, and he was called to the scene along with her mother. They were sat down by a military officer at their kitchen table one morning. After the knock on the door, the Air Force people walk in the door. Well, actually, it wasn't the Air Force. It was the Army Air Force at the time. Walked in, sat down, and said, you will not disclose, you will not talk about anything that you saw out there in the Foster Ranch. And if you do, just be aware there's a big desert out there, and it'll take them a long, long time to find your bodies.
That's what
Frankie Rowe said. I mean, she's on record as actually saying that. So you get that kind of information, and the Roswell radio station, the owner of that radio station was threatened with closing his station down if he did report the information. So all of the substructure behind the scenes, that's the stuff that doesn't get reported. It comes out 40 or 50 years later. And when you realize that the kind of work that the government did to cover this thing up, and later on all the stuff comes out, it's basically a non sequitur. So you can just sort of chuck it as far as you can throw an anvil. It's just not going to fly anymore.
Right. Now, the question I did have for you earlier, you made a reference to fossil fuel.
Yeah.
You made a reference to fossil fuels. Interestingly enough, we had Wade Frazier on the show last week, and he was talking about the free energy the world of the living in the world of the free energy inventors and stuff like that, and just covering what humans can do with free energy and things like that. Not even talking about retrieved alien technology and trying to back engineer that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But just talking about the stuff that's come out that would impinge on and threaten the fossil fuel industry. That's a huge subject, and it's full of minefields. And
of course it is.
You know. So if you're talking about way beyond what humans can do, retrieved crash retrievals and stuff like that, and that sort of technology, and back engineering that, and then that there are people out there that have access to that technology. Not you, not me,
right?
But there are people that have access to that technology. But if it was to come out, it would blow our current world out of the water.
Yeah. Well, I think the UFO phenomenon and the as you mentioned, the back-engineered extraterrestrial technology, they are the foes of fossil fuel. There's no doubt about that. If we take a look at what the government might be doing in the back rooms and as far as back-engineering this stuff. But the other big enemy of the fossil fuel industry is quantum physics. And that's sort of within our realm of understanding at this point, at least some of it is. And scientists have made some major breakthroughs in discovering on our own what quantum physics has in store for us in terms of the kinds of energy forces that are out there in the universe and the way we understand physics in the universe. And when scientists at the quantum field level begin to make their understandings known publicly about what this whole energy source is as far as the kinds of energy that's out there. And one of the analogies that I had put forward to me by, I don't know if you know who Tom Violette is. He's a physicist who's done a lot of work in this field. And he and I were talking during one of an interview, and I said, Tom, can you give me an idea as to how powerful and how pervasive this type of energy is? And he said, well, Victor, try to get your mind around this. And he said, we are at a point where we at least know that it can be done. Knowing something can be done and actually doing it are two different things, but just knowing that it can be done is a big step forward. And he says, we know that we very soon will be able to quantify this energy. And he said, if we can get to the point of quantifying this energy that's in the quantum vacuum of space, if we have one cup of this energy, just one cup of it, that one cup, if we use it in the right way, as it's the way it's supposed to be used, can boil the water in all of the oceans of the world. Tick, tick.
Yeah.
Tick. Think about that for a second.
Yeah, that's a thinker.
And, you know, it sounds fantastic. It sounds absolutely impossible. But when you look at some of the things that are going on within quantum physics, and I'm not an expert. I've done a little bit of reading. I've interviewed some very, very prominent people in this field. And the whole idea of what this free energy is, this quantum, that's in the quantum vacuum of space, it's the sky is the limit and beyond. And that is where I believe the UFO phenomenon, whatever that phenomenon is, that's where it stands too. We are at the beginning, the embryonic stages of understanding quantum physics. These extraterrestrial civilizations that are out there, they've been dealing with this for centuries, if not longer.
So millions of years.
Of course. And they've achieved, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, it's just my own personal opinion, and I kind of waver back and forth between, travel at light speed and interdimensional travel. I haven't really decided what that all means and which one is really the case, and maybe is both. But I'm convinced through some of the people that I've interviewed that beyond speed light is in fact possible, and that once you move beyond the speed of light, weird things begin to happen in terms of time and distance and moving through space. So we've only begun to get at that. And it's like Galileo, when he made his pronouncements about the world not being the center of the universe, and he was put in house arrest for the balance of his life when he made the announcement by the Catholic Church.
Right.
And when you think about how ridiculous that was, back then he was contravening the major paradigm of understanding. And so we're in a very similar position right now. Yeah. So when someone like me comes onto a radio program and says, you know, a cup of free energy can boil the water in all the oceans, and that's not me saying that. You know, don't take my word for it. The physicists are saying that the amount and the type of energy this is will make light speed travel and other things possible that we cannot even imagine at this point. So, you know, we've only begun to scratch the surface about what the UFO phenomenon really means, not only in a geopolitical way, but in a scientific way too.
Exactly. You now, know, it's funny that he mentioned
we can move the.
Go ahead, Tom.
Go ahead. Got you up there. How can we move the this exopolitics now movement to something that would make a big difference?
Well, the number of people that I know within the exopolitics movement, what I've learned about most of the individuals in this field is that most of them have a very clear understanding of what the media is all about and how to work the media. They're moving away for a moment about some of the more speculative, statements of some people within exopolitics. What I think people in exopolitics have done, and I'm talking now about fellows like Michael Salas. He and I worked together on some major initiatives. Michael has a very clear understanding of how to work the media. And I think that kind of expertise, that kind of understanding, how to use press releases, how to interact with reporters and journalists, and how to draw people in the media in to have them understand that there's a real issue here. There's a real issue, not only in the sense of it being a reality, but it has political permutations to it that would boggle any journalist's mind. And I know Stephen Bassett and I have talked about this a lot. If anybody in journalism right now that's listening to this program, if there is a journalist out there listening right now, if you want to write a Pulitzer Prize winner, write about the disclosure movement and write about UFOs and write about government secrecy and write about the government cover-up. And if you do a thorough enough job within your newspaper, you will, in fact, win a Pulitzer Prize. And I think that kind of understanding about how to work the media is entrenched in what exopolitics is. It is, if you forget about the word exo for a second, it's politics. It's knowing how to work the polemical aspects of an issue, of any issue, and working that issue to a point where those two polemical points of view, come together and make sense. And when you take a look at what exopolitics is, it draws a very serious parallel to ordinary politics. You bring people together to engage in a discourse, engage in a debate. And once you have that debate open, that's when real progress is made. Right now, the discourse in the public domain about UFOs is virtually non-existent. Now, I'm talking about, the general public. It's not there. It's not on the news every night. We're not talking about it. There is no public discourse. And what exopolitics tries to do is begin that meaningful discourse in a way that most other organizations, and I really fault MUFON for this. MUFON was one of the ones that, as far as I was concerned, kept this thing under a hat. And they did it probably by default, by their own methods of looking at information. They did not develop the political aspects of this. They did not develop the polemical aspects of it. And I fault MUFON in a huge degree for keeping this thing under wraps in a way almost similar to its own little cover-up. Now, the people are going to argue with that point of view. I know that. But when you take a look for how long did MUFON not make any kind of public statements or challenge any type of political figure about the UFO issue, it's mind-boggling what MUFON could have done to bring this thing to a head, but it didn't do it for year after year after year. It failed miserably. Now, I'm not saying exopolitics is the perfect vehicle. It's definitely not. There are some aspects of it to which I disagree too. But the one thing in exopolitics is they are hell bent for leather to get this thing into the public domain, look at the political realities of it. What does it mean to humanity, good or bad, whatever it might mean? The truth must come out. And I know every single individual in exopolitics. There are not many people in this field that I don't know. And each one of them is compelled in that direction in one way or another to get a public discourse about the UFO phenomenon and the extraterrestrial presence. And that, to me, is the key, the key platform in what exopolitics can really do to bring this thing forward. And, you know, there are some people on the periphery of it that are doing a great job. And I think sort of the disclosure movement has learned a whole lot from some exopoliticians. And I think some of them are working hand in hand to bring disclosure to a forefront by using the media. So that's basically, you know, in answer to your question, Tom, that's how I think exopolitics can move forward and really have a profound effect on the media. Because a lot of media people that are very good at it are moving into the exopolitical field and recognizing that exopolitics just could be the way to bring this stuff forward in the way it hasn't been brought forward before.
Go ahead, Tom.
But do you think are we in the, you know, in the stages that we can probably make a big effect with this approach?
With an exopolitical approach, I don't think there's any one approach that's going to be the magic pill. I really don't. I see some of the things that Stephen Greer has done, and the way he can draw attention to the subject, I see as being very, very effective. But yet again, in a lot of ways, Stephen has said and done some things that are highly speculative. People in exopolitics, the same sort of thing. The people in exopolitics have made some pretty wild and outlandish statements about, transporting to Mars, getting in a transporter and being physically transported to Mars. I just don't understand that. And what I don't understand about it is not the fact that it's possible. What I don't understand is how that kind of rhetoric helps us. It's too far out at this point in time. It's way, way too far out on a limb. And you have to...
Although Bob Deaton did talk about it.
Yeah, I know. I realize that. And maybe he knows information that I don't. And God bless him if he does. If in fact he does, then that may be the truth. I don't know. But we have to, and I think Bob might admit this, we have to, when we speak the truth, we have to be careful. When we speak about wanting the truth, we have to be careful because there are a lot of people out there, when you mention it to them, the media is one of them, you have to frame this information in a way that's going to make them ask questions rather than tell us that we're full of baloney. We have to engage these individuals. Right. Yeah, that's right. We have to engage them in a positive way and say and frame information in a credible way. So when Bob Deaton says to the audience, he was in a room where they were tracking a huge flotilla of UFOs, NATO radar. I forget when it was, but it was in the 50s, whenever it was, 50s or 60s. That kind of information coming from a NATO officer is credible. But when they start talking about transporting somebody to Mars, you're not going to get a whole lot of people in the media that are going to listen to you unless you have absolute doggone proof that it did happen, existing. You can replicate it right there before.
But with what Bob Deaton was talking about, that could be considered witness testimony, but witness testimony from someone who was a part of NATO, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like trying to unravel a huge ball of wool. You know, it's so difficult. Yeah. There's no one stream. There's no one little piece of the thread when you pull it that's going to help unwind it. You have to find the right one. And say, that's the little piece of twine that we need to pull on that will get us to the other end of the string. And we've yet to find that.
Well, you know,
it's interesting. I got a quick one, Tom.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you can look back through time in the UFO field and see what was acceptable when.
Yeah.
And you could go from the crash nuts and bolts aspect of UFOs, and then you get someone like Jacques Vallée who talks about the possible interdimensional aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Now, nuts and bolts UFO researchers shut him down left, right, and center. And it was a completely unacceptable concept. Later on, it became more acceptable, so people could talk about it at that point. That's same right. thing is with UFO abduction cases. UFO abduction cases, people that have been in the UFO field before that happened, so many of them shut that down in a second. They wouldn't even talk about it. They wouldn't even bring it up in conversation. They would leave the room if you started talking about it because they will just not be a party to that silliness. Now, it's completely normal. Everybody talks about it. If you're a UFO investigator, you've been in the game long enough, it's normal now. And all of these, it's like little tiny baby steps that the people are taking. In 10 years, you talk about people being transported to Mars, it'll be completely normal. Everybody will be talking about the UFO field.
Well, that's what I said earlier, and I completely agree with what you're saying. We're moving ahead in the conceptualization of what was normal 45 years ago as to what's normal conceptually now is they're light years apart. And when you take a look at the difference in those positions, the question comes to my mind is what has propelled us forward in making some things that were unacceptable 30, 40, 50 years ago, and ideologically, why are they now acceptable? What is it within the human mind that encapsulates that it allows it to enter our consciousness, allows us to change the paradigm as to how we're thinking? What is it in the human genome that allows us to do that? And thank God for it, because it will allow us to accept some of the concepts that may even beyond what I call the thought that hasn't been thought before. Are there things out there that we just can't think of? They're there, but we just don't know they're there. We don't know what we don't know. So moving in that direction all of the time really helps us propel it. And I guess maybe some of the people that are more speculative in the exopolitical field, maybe they're helping us in a way that we don't know. They're moving us forward by being cutting edge. I consider myself relatively a cutting edge individual, but relative to someone who doesn't know anything about the UFO field, as I said earlier, we are much further ahead than other people. But there are other individuals who conceptualize things that I just don't agree with. Not because they're not possible, but because they don't attract the general public and the media to accepting the rational discourse and the good debate about what the UFO ET issue is all about. That's my only concern about it. Not that I disagree with it, with the fact that there may be bases on Mars. I just don't think that's the kind of rhetoric we need to engage the public and the media at this point in time. It may be someday it might be like you say, Scott, might acceptable. Be, yeah. But right now, I don't think it's in the works that's going to help us move things forward.
Yeah, baby steps.
Yeah,
exactly.
And back in the old days, to have a new idea in physics, the old physicists had to die.
That's right. Yeah.
Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty much the rhetoric that we had, for the last 40, 50 years, and that's part of the reason that it has taken so long for this field to, get to this level of, let's call it seriousness, and we still haven't reached the pinnacle of where it should be.
Of course,
Definitely, we have to have, the stuff that can be looked at seriously and get more people involved in the media involved and the governments and so on, and put them into an area where they can sort of sidestep the issue, because now it's still, even though we get more airplay for sure, it's still kind of with a little smile on the side, and it needs to be brought up much higher level.
Well, my gauge, Tom, is if this stuff somehow on a consistent basis, or even just once to begin with, and I use it as a barometer. Maybe it's a fallacious argument. I don't really know. But we've seen it on CNN. We've seen it on ABC. The Peter Jennings special, so on and so forth. But that didn't have the impact that we wanted it to have because it wasn't done in a proper investigative way properly. But my gauge is 60 minutes. And CBS 60 Minutes, yeah. And just maybe I'll explain myself. I feel that 60 Minutes is a paradigm. Okay, it's not just a news show, as much as it's it puts on information that might not be that palatable or interesting or within a normal framework. But we have to understand that 60 Minutes is watched by literally millions and millions of people in the United States and throughout the world on a consistent basis, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, every single Sunday night. And people go out of their way to sit down and watch 60 Minutes. They trust Leslie Stahl. They trust Steve Croft. They trust Andy Rooney. You know, we can disagree with what they say or do, but they do watch them. And they not only watch them, but they internalize what 60 Minutes has done over the past number of years as it's been on. And when and if the media controls about this whole issue are either lessened or taken away, or someone within 60 Minutes says, okay, you know what, we're gonna break this glass ceiling. We're going to cut through this glass ceiling and decide to cover the UFO issue. When 60 Minutes decides to do it, when 60 Minutes decides, okay, it's time. It's time for us to get into this. My feeling is this thing is going to bust open on the White House lawn the next morning. All the files are going to be thrown out the window. They'll land on the White House lawn, and all the reporters will see them. There won't be UFOs in the White House lawn. There'll be files about UFOs. The questions to the president at the next conference, press conference, will come in leaps and bounds. And that will all because 60 Minutes will have dealt with it. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's too speculative for me to think about that. Maybe the media controls that the government is using are too powerful. But if it ever happens that 60 Minutes begins to engage this issue on a consistent basis, not just with a one-time show, this is not a one-time issue. This issue, once it's brought up in that way, will have to be dealt with every single day. It'll have to be on the front pages of every single newspaper every single day for 3 months for people to understand that we are not alone. There are extraterrestrials, there are off-world civilizations that are here, and they've been here for thousands of years. How are we going to deal with this? And it's going to be part of the process of change and the paradigm shifts that we'll be involved in.
It's funny. I'm of two minds on this. One mind says, yes, we are in the process of change, and the other mind says, let's think back 25 years ago when you thought, geez, you know, it must be just around the corner. It's got to be within 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, they can't hold this stuff ever. And then 15 years ago, you had another little spurt where you started to think, okay, now this is it. This is the event.
You're absolutely right. Oh, for sure.
And then Disclosure Project comes out with Stephen Greer, and you watch that, and you go, oh, my God, it's happening. I'm here. I'm alive, and I'm watching it. Disclosure Project comes out. And then nothing, it just peters out to nothing, you know?
It's
the same thing across the board. And I had that part of my, I guess I've been in the industry long enough to have that sort of a perspective that you go, wow, I've hoped so many times for that revelation to come out, and it doesn't. But the other part of my mind is the one that says, yeah, but look at the amount of shows they're doing on the UFO phenomena. Look at how many TV shows are focusing on aliens. Look at how many movies are coming out about this, sort of slowly adapting the public to the concept of aliens and life outside of Earth. And as an example, the Battle for LA. There's another movie coming out called Battle Los Angeles. It'll be in theaters in March 11th, on the 11th month, so 3/11/11. Battle for Los Angeles. So then that's another big example of how they're just sort of throwing it out there. Do you have any thoughts on that new movie coming out?
Oh, yeah, I do. Robert Salas and Chuck Holt were part of the press conference that began last Tuesday in Los Angeles. They, for whatever reason, and I know Robert quite well, I don't know Chuck that well, they were asked to help promote that movie. And so they were part of the press team, and they came out and talked about their experiences with the nuclear missiles and so on and so forth, as people involved in the UFO phenomenon. Now, I've seen trailers of it, and I don't know if people are familiar with the Battle of Los Angeles, the lights over Los Angeles in 1945, I believe it was.
Yeah, when the actual event happened,
43.
There was all these spotlights on an object that was floating over Los Angeles, thousands of rounds of munitions were shot at this thing and didn't even touch it. Like, there were direct hits. You could see direct hits had made no effect to this thing. It just moseyed along and did its own thing and had no effect, and basically was a show of power in a way.
Yeah. Now, if you've seen any of the clips of the trailer, I've seen some extensive one, and it's nothing like the event at all. Basically, have you seen any of the trailers?
I have. Yes.
Yeah. I've seen a couple.
It's pretty. I mean, it's not even remotely similar. It's not even remotely similar to what the actual event was like. But in Robert's view, this kind of information, even though it's almost like Independence Day to a certain degree, it brings it forward to the consciousness of the people. My only argument with it is it's this good alien, bad alien scenario, and I think there's too much surrounding the threat, the development of fear. And I guess if you're Hollywood, that's where the money is, and you can't fault them for that because they're in a money making industry.
Well, yeah, Hollywood has to have the. You know, the fighting and the otherwise it'd be too boring, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's they don't really make a lot. They make more money out of shows like V and movies like they want to make like that and Independence Day than they do with, you know, you holding hands and frolicking around singing Kumbaya. Although E.T. was, I guess, another example, but a friendly alien concept, you know, E.T.
There haven't been many of those, though, have there?
No, I'd say the vast majority are bad, evil alien coming to eat your babies. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, yeah, and that is a problem for me. But then again,
and we're in that time.
Oh, what happened, Tom? Did we lose you?
Hello?
No, go ahead.
Sorry, I think we almost got lost there. No, I was saying that, you know, we're at a time right now where there's a lot of upheaval, you know, worldwide. So, you know, the good and the bad guy type. Approach is much more, you know, in taste of what the rest of the world is doing right now.
Yeah,
it's like the old West movies playing in outer space.
That's right. Yeah, good guys, bad guys. The cavalry comes, and all the problems are solved.
But there might be an agenda there as well, because of course, I mean, Hollywood is sort of, you know, they're doing their own thing for their own reasons. But there's also possibly some. Manipulation and control involved there as well. Mm-hmm. So if you're getting a lot of messages like that, there may be a conspiracy reason for it.
Well, that's stuff of a whole another program that we could talk about another time, because we do have a lot of the documents that are out there. I don't know how you can portray it, but there's a very serious. I've got one memo here by Edward Taos from the CIA indicating that there shall be some sort of control by the CIA. And I'll read from the document. It's recommended that the CIA surveillance on the subject matter of UFOs in coordination with proper authorities of primary operational concern be continued. It is strongly urged, however, that no indication of CIA interest or concern reach the press or the public in the view of the probable alarmist tendencies to accept such interests as confirmatory regarding the published facts in the hands of the United States government about UFOs. That's in a memo, you know. So in 1952 memo, when you see that kind of information, you got to know that the CIA has got to be involved some ways of trying to put in place mechanisms to develop either an alternative answer for what UFOs are, or covering it up, or both.
Right, and I mean it's the one of the biggest boys in the block is entertainment. I mean, out there entertaining. If you're in the information industry, called, you know, CIA, then Hollywood is a big informational platform to use. It's a tool. It's a hammer. So if it can be used, then I would say it is used.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Mean, if you can think it, it's so.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So just tell us what what projects you're working on now that you want to get out there? We've gone over time, but we do this, but yeah, we get into great conversations with amazing guests that have lots of information, like yourself.
Well, one of the big things that we're doing right now is myself and Robert Salas and one other individual who, for this point, must remain nameless, we are attempting to put forward, and we already have put forward, all of the information about the nuclear missile shutdowns of the seven officers. We've coalesced all that information, all seven affidavits, along with Robert Salas's back to Montana document outlining all of the events. What we've done is we've put together a package of all this information, the affidavits and other intelligence, and we've packaged it together and we have faxed it to the chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security, Congressman Peter King. Congressman Peter King is the chair of that Homeland Security Committee. And we faxed that information to Congressman King December 17th of 2010. And we've been in communication with his office, with his legislative assistant, Michelle Ingerson. And we know that she has passed this information along to the congressman and to at least one other member on the committee, the Homeland Security Committee. And we're looking for and hoping for some sort of response from them with respect to what this committee could do with this information in the context of it being a national security threat. In other words, asking Congressman Peter King to bring this forward to the House of Representatives through his committee, the Homeland Security Committee, indicating that the shutting down, the unauthorized shutdown of nuclear missiles beginning in 1967, is in fact a very, very serious national security threat. So that's the information that we've got on the table. We've been working for the past, almost 3 months now on that with Congressman King, and hoping that he can do something with that information. It's a biggie, and we hope that something will come of it. We're not sure, but it's we think it's a stab in the right direction.
Sure. I mean, you got to put it out there, right? Sure. So talk about some of the other projects you're doing. You have the TV shows or radio?
Yeah. Richard Serrett, we do the radio show. He does the radio show every Sunday night at 11 o'clock Eastern Time on AM 740. And if you want to listen to that program, people throughout the internet, all you have to do is go to AM 740. It's called Zoomer Radio, Z-O-O-M-E-R. Just Google that and get on there 11 o'clock Eastern Time. You can listen to Richard Serrett's show. And about once a month, maybe twice a month, depending on the number of guests that we can line up, excuse me, we talk about UFOs. And I sort of assist Richard in that respect. But recently what Richard has done in concert with Moses Neimer, who owns Zoomer Radio, he also owns Vision Television up here in Canada, and they've put together a series at this point of 18 film documentary documents that have made the airways on Vision TV. And these documentaries have been very incisive. One of them has dealt with UFOs, a lot of paranormal stuff involved in it, but we've got some really good opportunities to bring this forward. And Richard has been in Arizona, in the UK, interviewing some of the officers involved in the nuclear shutdowns and at the Rendlesham Forest incident. And Richard, it will be bringing this information forward through Vision Television over the next, oh my goodness, we hope for perpetuity, but we know we've got 18 shows all ready to go, and they've already started being aired.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Do they have an internet link?
Can you?
The link for, yes, just type Richard Serrett, www.richardserrett, and it'll take you right to the conspiracy show.
Okay. Go ahead, Tom.
And give us your internet site as well.
Oh, okay. It's the actual site name is ZLAN Communications, but the actual URL is sites, S-I-T-E-S, dot Google, dot com, // ZLAN Communications.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
So people can go there and they can check out all of your writings there. They can listen to your radio show on 740?
AM 740 radio, yep.
AM 740, and that'll be 8 o'clock Pacific or 11 o'clock Eastern. For anybody who wants to go check that out on the internet. It was great having you. And the thing is, like I said, when we have...
My pleasure.
Yeah, when we have guests that have so much information, I mean, you've been in this field for such a long time. You've gathered over the years. I'm sure we could probably do, you know, 5 more hours and
oh, for
still
sure,
have
yeah.
information on yeah. subjects. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to just one other thing. I've got one more second. If people do want to become plugged into the database that we have and become recipients of our press releases and announcements, all they have to do is send an email to me. I'll give you my email address, and I have no compunction of not letting it out. It's Zeland, Zland, at Sympatico, SYMPATICO.CA. That's Zeland at Sympatico.CA. So if anyone wants to email me and letting me know that they want to be in the database on our email list, they'll receive consistent updates from us on a. And by the way, we are literally the only news agency here in Canada and arguably throughout North America that deals exclusively with this throughout the press and releasing press releases on a regular basis. And thank you for having me on.
Great.
I appreciate
it. It was great to have you, and thank you for
thank
coming.
Thank you, and we'll hopefully do it again.
We'll do it again, yeah, and we'll talk to everybody next week.
BBS Radio.